Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Bonnie North. For a long time, the Montaigne most mentioned on public radio has been former Morning Edition host Renee Montaigne. This is not an interview about Renee Montaigne. It is instead an interview about the 16th century French philosopher Michel de Montaigne.
And even then, it's not so much an interview about the philosopher, but rather a conversation with Wisconsin writer Michael Perry about how he's learned more about himself through reading the words of a long-departed nobleman. Perry's new book is called Montaigne in Barn Boots, and he explained to Lake Effect's Mitch Teich where it all started.
It was an accident of urology. And what happened is I had a kidney stone a while back, and like a lot of self-employed folks, I had really bad health insurance. And I knew I was going to have to pay for the whole trip to the ER and the meds and all that out of my own pocket. So as I was lying on the gurney in the ER, I thought, well, I should try and write an essay about this and maybe I can sell it to a magazine. And indeed, I pitched it from the ER and got the go-ahead. After that, when I actually had to settle down and write the piece, and I did it for Men's Health magazine, they actually wanted some actionable information. I started reading medical journal pieces about kidney stones, and this guy Montaigne kept popping up. He was this 16th century philosopher slash nobleman, and they kept citing him. I think, you know, docs and researchers who write pieces like that, they're always looking for a way to make their research interesting. And so they would put a little something in there about this guy, Montaigne, who had written about having kidney stones in the 1500s. So honestly, it's embarrassing to admit that's how I discovered him, because as a writer, I should have been able to tell you, well, some say he invented the essay. But no, I came to him through kidney stones. But then, of course, I veered off into reading his other stuff and found it fascinating and approachable and relatable. And it became a hobby of mine to read him.
So you share this great image, the metaphor of pouring his essays through a colander and scraping out what's left. And, you know, I think a lot of us imagine like the process of reading philosophy is going to a dimly lit library, a drafty room with the faces of doer people staring down at you. But it appears you prefer your Montaigne in kind of drips and drabs when you can take them.
Yeah, two things about that. Rather than going to a dark place, I have read a lot of Montaigne on a deer stand on my iPhone, because that's what I got with me. And you pull up an app and read some Montaigne. And then the other thing, I have a chapter about how I do read Montaigne, and I talk about going out to feed the chickens and how they're forever zigzagging here and there. You know, you throw the feed out and they're like, oh, there it is. And they get started one place and then they see another chicken eating. They're like, oh, no, the good stuff's over there. And they whip over there. And then they see something over by a thistle and they go over there. And so in a sense, yes, that's how I've picked up on Montaigne through tweets, through blogs, through comment sections, through books, through websites, everything. It's just sort of take it as it comes and very tangential. And then I also equate – there's always the chicken who grabs the biggest piece of gristle and is real piggy about it, but then suddenly discovers she can't swallow it. And so she just stands there blinking for 2 hours but refusing to let go. And that often happens to me when I'm reading Montaigne.
Well, it's interesting because just a few minutes ago I did an interview with a group of people for whom philosophy was the entree for them to start reading more slowly. And that seems to maybe mesh with how you have to kind of be able to work with Montaigne.
Right. I have a whole chapter in the book about absent-mindedness, because Montaigne wrote a lot about being absent-minded. I've always felt bad as a writer in the fact that I have terrible retention. If I can read a novel and love it and enjoy it and immerse myself in it, but I have a terrible time keeping track of plots. And if someone asks me 20 minutes after I finish it about certain characters, I sometimes can't remember them. And that's always bothered me. But Montaigne himself said, if I'm a man of much reading, I am also a man of very little retention. And I remember reading that and going, oh, well, if it was okay for him, it's okay for me. But that then feeds into the absent-mindedness chapter, where I talk about I have to go back and read and reread in order to really absorb something. And fortunately, Montaigne's the kind of writer that you can revisit him and still find him engaging and interesting.
You write a lot about this idea of intersectionality, and not even just in the chapter on intersectionality, but that's kind of where this notion of being able to exist in multiple worlds, which is sort of what Montaigne kind of gets into as well.
Yeah, and there's another example. I use the term intersectionality, but I also take a moment to explain to folks that, look, this is a very specific academic term. It has very specific meaning. You need to understand that I'm already wandering off the yard once I start using it. And that's an issue of respect to the academics who have worked on this concept. On the other hand, I am also trying to speak to a group of folks who are at the Volunteer Fire Department meeting. And so I'm trying to work both places, and you know, I got an email the other day from someone who said, I had to look up the word intersectionality. Well, the mission accomplished then. In that chapter, I think I start out by talking about the fact that it's a shame that Montaigne couldn't make it to the 2013 Augusta Bean and Bacon Days Demolition Derby, because my daughters and I went. We had a great time. But 2 days previous to that, we went to the Shakespeare Festival, and it was my younger daughter's first exposure to the Bard. And there's this idea that, at least, that I feel so fortunate that I'm happy to be at the Shakespeare Festival. I'm happy to be at the Demolition Derby. It's difficult to discuss in that you don't want to come off as saying, look, I'm such a great guy. No, no. What I try to tell my daughters, it's not about you being a great guy, that you are a great person, that you're working both ends of the cultural spectrum. It's the fact that you've actually expanded your opportunities for joy. And I have a whole thing in there about me having to look at myself in the mirror constantly and take myself down a peg and reassess. And Montaigne was very, very good at that. Yeah. And he'd also – I mean, he'd write about anything. He wrote about sex and thumbs and the sexual danger of coaches, the kind that are pulled by horses, that is. yeah, he would take on anything.
Well, and you take on anything. And if I – if memory serves, I think I have read nearly everything that that you have published. I don't remember quite as much discussion of sex in any of your previous efforts.
I thought,
in fairness, it's mostly driven by the writings of Montaigne. However,
yes, I'm always everything in here is predicated on something that Montaigne wrote. And I thought this is an unfortunate phrase, but I thought long and hard about doing this. And the reason I did it is it is not that prurient, and I really couldn't keep up with the prevalent prurience if I wanted to. But it's pretty blunt, and I just feel like there were some things I wish I'd have known earlier in life. And even later in life, there were things I wish that I'd have known more people understood. And so writing about – if you're going to write about life, you got to write about sex. And so it is in there. And as I said, it's not – there's nothing too personal or
– And Montaigne had some interesting views of sex and marriage, most notably what he saw the value of extramarital
– Yeah. He's his views, they're a mix of progressive and deeply problematic. And I think, as I have said, as the excuse and epithet has it, he is a man of his times, and that phrase is a really tricky phrase. But yeah, he, on the one hand, he was progressive in the sense that he felt that women had a right to have a rich sex life and that they were interested in, but on the other hand, he said things like, well, I believe in having a mistress because I do depraved things with her. I would never do those things with my wife because she's a gallant and good woman. And I'm going, well, I don't know how that discussion would go at your kitchen table.
Which is, again, speaks to how, you know, it's one thing to read a 16th century French philosopher. It's another thing to take everything that a 16th century French philosopher says as literally, relevant in the 21st century.
Well, that's another thing I hit on in the book. When I first started reading Montaigne, what happened to me happens to a lot of people, including Sarah Bakewell, an English woman who wrote a wonderful book about Montaigne a couple of years ago. You start out by going, oh, my gosh, that's me. Oh, that's me. That's me. But as I wrote in the book, there's a danger in that. You also have to examine the areas where you don't agree and or where you maybe see something in him that reminds you of yourself, but it ain't in a good way. And so I try to do that as well.
I want to ask you one other area that was, it surprised me that it showed up in here, and I found myself strangely interested in it. And that was, you're trying to evaluate where you come down on the idea of aesthetics.
Yeah. That came as a surprise to me, too. But the paragraph that opens that chapter, I wrote it. It's about Prince and how Prince was an influence on me. Now, look at me. There's just a whole bunch of reasons why you would never guess that and why Prince probably wouldn't want you to guess
Not wearing a lot of purple, yeah. for starters.
But I wrote that, and then about a week later, he died. And I was caught off guard by how – the day I heard he died, I was at my desk in rural Fall Creek, Wisconsin, and I felt really sad. And I felt like a certain energy had disappeared from the world that I – you just always knew that he was at least there making things. And suddenly it was gone. And I was clearly not the only one feeling that way. But that got me just to thinking about how he, you know, despite our dissimilarities, he expanded my idea of masculinity. He expanded my idea of creativity, and he expanded my idea of the Midwest. Now, in the book, I said he expanded it a bit more than was sustainable for me, but he got me started. And then that got me to thinking about I've always been embarrassed by aesthetics. I care about how things look and sound and feel. I talk about the word aesthetics itself. I love it when it's spelled A-E instead of just E because there's something about the meshed A-E that drops my blood pressure about 5 points. And that's silly, but it's true. And when you come from where I do, which is blue-collar background, farmers, loggers and whatnot – you're kind of embarrassed to admit that you care how your coffee cup looks and that the shape of my coffee cup and the feel of the brush steel affects the way that I taste the coffee. Not the kind of thing that you talk about down to feed mill generally. Although they care how their pickup trucks look. Well, that's aesthetics. And so, yeah, I dove off into aesthetics and there is also a lot of fun to be had because Montaigne is talking about – he's like, yeah, there's these people that are sticking – rods through their noses and in their ears. I'm like, yeah, that's we call that the mall.
Yeah,
But I said something to the effect that ultimately I like to believe that aesthetics are a form of grace and that grace precipitates grace or enlarges grace or something like that. So I hope maybe.
Well, and in terms of quoting, I think someone else makes the point that you quote that really, when it all comes down to it, the best book written about Montaigne was written by Montaigne.
Yeah, and what I say about that quote is you want to put that at the end of your Montaigne book.
Yeah, exactly.
Because that's the truth. What you really want to do is you want to sit down and read the guy himself.
Mike Perry, always a great chance to catch up with you. Thanks so much.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Wisconsin writer Michael Perry's latest book is called Montaigne in Barn Boots, An Amateur Ambles Through Philosophy. He spoke with Mitch Teich ahead of an appearance this evening at Books & Company in Oconomowoc. And that is today's edition of the show. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Thanks so much for tuning in today, and I hope you can be with us again tomorrow at 10 for another Lake Effect on listener-supported 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee.
Stay tuned. Fresh air comes your way next. It is 11 o'clock.